Hi, I'm Simon Campbell.
And I'm Susie Starlight.
Welcome to the Supertone Show.
Magazine, The Light Pours Out of Me, from their debut studio album, Real Life, released on LP and cassette in June 1978 on Virgin Records.
Peaks 29, on the UK album charts. Why it didn't get higher, I will never know. But, Magazine, this show we're doing basically about Manchester. Some of the bands that came out of Manchester, the ones that we actually really, really like, because there's so many bands that came out of Manchester, there's hundreds of them. And if you look them up on the web, bands from Manchester, you know, well, just absolutely piles of them. And what we didn't want to do is six shows on Manchester, because the methodology behind this series is to actually go to the places that we are going to be playing in our October tour. And one of the dates is the Met in Bury, which, of course, is Manchester, where I was born, very close to the Manchester City Centre. It's only about 8 miles away, so it's to the north. The God's country up there, as opposed to the diabolical south of Manchester, full of, I don't know,
Jesus, I love it up north. It's anyway, my spiritual home.
Yeah, so that's what we're doing. So this week we're doing Manchester.
Yes, it's the Starlight and Campbell UK tour. Let's start off with Manchester bands. Yeah.
And I think the most important thing to talk about this particular band is that.
Go on.
Right, John Leckie, the producer of this.
Yes.
Who went on to produce loads of people, one of being The Fall. He's actually produced The Fall. He's worked as tape operator on Metal by Pink Floyd. He was worked with Argent, Hold Your Head Up, it was tape op on that. He's got a career that spans everything. And I think he did a particularly fine job on this record. It always jumps out of the speakers when we hear it, doesn't it, you know?
Well, it's one of my favourites. Mm. Right up there, actually. And I didn't really know much about until I met you, actually. I think you introduced me to this very song. An English post-punk band formed in Manchester by Howard Devoto after he left the Buzzcocks. Yeah. And they describe it as edgy, nervous energy punk with elements of art rock.
Yeah. I spent an afternoon smoking marijuana in a tent at Deeper Vale with the Buzzcocks.
You did not.
I did. Howard Devoto wasn't there, but Pete Shelley and that lot were there. So, but the thing is, with Manchester, I've got a very deep connection, because that's, you know, when I started playing guitar and started doing sessions, that's where I was. And, you know, so I know all the studios, I know all the musicians there, so I bumped into these people all the bloody time.
What band played at Deeply Vale?
Oh, there was lots on, but it was like a psychedelic. It was like Rochdale's answer to Woodstock. Honestly,
excellent.
Yeah, I'm not kidding. And I think we played there 3 years as Whitefire. And I remember the headliner. I can't remember very much about it because I was doing a lot of stuff that I shouldn't have been doing then.
Imagine a nation exercises.
Indeed, yeah. But one of the ones that I do remember is Steve Hillage, who was, of course, was the guitar player in The Mighty Gong.
Whoa.
And he went out on his own and he did a great album called L. I think we've played, it's a great version of Hurdy Gurdy Man by Donovan. Anyway, let's get back onto Magazine.
No, that's great.
Yeah. Having toured much of the album during 1977 and 1978, they recorded sessions using the Virgin Mobile.
I love that. And Abbey, the truck.
And Abbey Road Studios. Guitarist John McGeoch, and, you know, I saw him play on, it was later with Jules, and before he died, and it was amazing. You know, it really was great to see them, you know. And, of course, we do know Dave Formula, who actually played on my second solo record, you know. And so we know him. Andy Seward's a big friend of us who produced the record.
Yeah, Dave's a lovely guy, really, really lovely guy. And it was quite interesting, actually, because when I was doing the research for this show, I came across some information that basically said that Johnny Greenwood named McGeoch as his biggest guitar influence, and said that Magazine songwriting informed much of what they did.
No, I didn't know that. Ah, you've dug that one up, and it's
I don't raise you, Johnny Greenwood.
You can't better the Greenwood hater.
Exactly. So isn't that interesting though that he cited John? You know, Johnny cited McGeoch is like it's Johnny cited John as his biggest guitar influence. And I think that they invited him to stand in at one point and he just couldn't do it. It was overwhelmed. I think it was in the early days of Radiohead. But
well, I think that the thing about his playing is the fact it's nothing to do with like the blues bass stuff that you hear a lot of, because I mean those double stops and those bends actually started with, I think it was Barclay James Harvest that started all that nonsense with the double bend. Not nonsense, it's great, I use them all the time, those double stops and stuff, bends. But that wah, it really does, it's a great line. And the guitars in the background as well, you know, and the bass, I love the bass on that because it's across the beat,
do, and the
drums are pretty straight.
And occasionally he goes down the stairs, do, and then goes back, do.
But what he's really, the drums are really cool as well, because it's like a Motown beat, bat, one of that, you know. Anyway.
But they were saying with McGeo, that he was more into like those textures and effects, which is exactly what you just said without even reading it in the notes.
Yeah. Oh, well, there you go. Well, and I always remember, but I think he played a Yamaha SG-2000, the guitar, and it was like a, it looks a bit like a, it's like the Yamaha's version of like a Les Paul. But it was a very, very cool band, you know.
Well, I remember I actually saw Howard Devoto when I was helping with the very inaugural Manchester International Festival and booked all the bands for the Big Top and ended up sort of hosting the tent. And late at night we had this this black and white sort of movie show as well. And William Morbitt did the soundtrack for when the bands weren't playing.
Wow.
And we sort of turned it into a bit of a club space. And in walked a guy in like a flasher mac, and it was Howard. And he just stood there. No sound. Just looked at the image. It was of the Sex Pistols at the Free Trade Hall. And then he just left. Didn't say hello to anyone. Didn't speak. He just came and looked. 5 minutes and left.
Well, that's what it's inspired the Buzzcocks, because that gig with the Sex Pistols, Free Trade Hall, legendary, it and Buzzcocks and many other, The Fall, a lot of the Manchester bands that came in that punk era.
I love the fact that he's got an attitude. There is an attitude, you know, if you like something, you like something. If you don't, you don't. It's very much a northern thing, isn't it? And I think that really seeps into the feel of the music.
Well, it does. And I think during the course of the show, it sort of has a feel, doesn't it?
It does.
Anger, angst and rain, lots of rain.
Everybody else died.
Sexy voice. Now, the tremolo, that's all I've got to say about that, because that sound, you see, we've got another guitar player, and I don't know we've managed to do it, but another great guitar player, you know, Johnny Marr, absolute brilliant player, great guitar orchestrator, you know, and, you know, when we talked about Johnny Greenwood before, and McGee, you know, McGee, I should say, it's like, he's another one, but this track is absolutely sensational. Every time I hear it, I go, yugga dugga 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 dugga. And how he actually achieved that effect, and I'm not going to talk about any more after this.
No, go on. Yeah. I love it.
But
love
how he achieved
stories.
The fact is that what he did, he put the guitar into the console, recorded it out into the console, and they played it back into a couple of twin reverbs.
Yeah.
Which are Fender twin, which are amplifiers, with a tremolo knob on. And it's well, it's actually vibrato or tremolo, whatever you want to call it, but it's misnamed on the amp. And but that's what gives it that gu 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 sound, yeah? And what they did is that they, to keep it in time during the track, it was on tape in those days, they didn't have any electronics to deal with this stuff. Him and John Porter, the producer, adjust the tremolo speed to keep it in time with the track. And that it's just a fantastic sound, and it just goes to prove that a guitar sound can just make a track. I mean, the rest of it's fantastic, and even though Morris is a complete arsehole of the most splendiferous magnitude, he sings it great. It's a great lyric and everything like that. But before we carry on to even more, I've got some secret stuff, because this was produced by John Porter, as I just mentioned.
Yes.
And John Porter was the original, well, the second bass player with Roxy Music. And he played on one of our favourite albums of all time, For Your Pleasure.
Uh-huh.
And he went on to produce stuff for Brian Ferry and lots of other music after that. But there you go.
Get you, Sunshine, and yeah. Your secret notes. So I think it's catching.
Yeah, so I thought I'd just get some of my secret notes. But he did a lot of stuff, you know, with some really, really great bands. But he did a lot of blues music as well.
Oh, right.
And actually, he's done Keb Moe, he's done B.B. King.
No way.
Yeah, he's done lots of blues, which is really very odd, you know.
It is.
Yeah.
Because you've got the Smiths and you've got the blues.
Yeah, it is really strange.
Yeah, yeah.
But obviously his taste is very eclectic, and he's obviously a great producer, you know.
It's an odd thing, actually. I think a girl I went to college with in Salford, Rachel Dickinson, they sold their family home to the Smiths in Hale or somewhere.
Is that right?
Manchester, if I remember. But the thing for me is that it's a bloke's band, again. But it's not, but it is. And what was interesting is when Paul Husband, the photographer from Manchester who's done our recent photographs, mm-hmm. and the photographs for the tour coming up, when he was here in Portugal with us, he actually said, "Suze, I've been thinking I need to rescue you and sit you down and play some Smiths."
Yeah.
And it was interesting because I was thinking about Paul as I'm listening to Morrissey going, Paul, obviously, and I think Paul's a great chap, and I was thinking, he obviously thinks I need to hear some Smith. So it's really interesting that you would choose that for this show. And I'm giving him a chance, and I wouldn't want to meet. In fact, another friend of ours, Lucy from Brighton, opened up for the Smiths
on
tour.
Right?
Years and years and years ago, Lucy Edwards. So anyway, it's an odd world, isn't it?
Well, it is. And I think that the thing about the Manchester scene all the way through, you know, because I indicated before about the drugs and everything, but, you know, it's always been a very druggy culture. And when you listen to the rest of the tracks on this show, you'll see. But Porter, the producer, said, we used to smoke dope from when we got out of bed in the morning to when we got back in bed. You're from Manchester, you smoke weed till it comes out of your ears. Which is, yeah, I sort of get that, you know.
Yeah, they were saying they even put the replacement studio light bulbs were red ones to give it more ambience as well, which I thought was ambiance.
But this wasn't actually, it wasn't a single or anything. It was on a B-side, wasn't it? And got released in an album?
What happened was that Jeff Travis, who runs Rough Trade, he didn't really believe in it. So they released it as the B-side of a single, William. It was really nothing in 1984. But in the days of radio request shows, right, it became the most requested track on the John Peel Show, Janice Long's and Annie Nightingale's. And so it ended up then being included on the compilation album Hatful of Hollow. And in the US, Canada, Australia and Warner UK, editions of Meet His Murder. So when it was released as a single in the UK, it reached 24 in the UK singles charts. So,
well, there you go. And, of course, that riff was inspired by Bo Diddley.
Of course. Dun, dun, dun,
dun, dun, dun, dun, dun. And when you hear it, you can hear it. It's like, hey, Bo Diddley, you know, all that. Anyway, so there we are.
But when you listen to it with headphones on or earbuds in, it made me feel a bit sick because it oscillates between your left and your right ear as well, and you're going dugga dugga dugga, and it makes you feel like someone's just shaking you up like a bit of jelly.
Four-letter words just to get me along. It's a difficulty, and I'm biting on They call me help. They call me Stacy. They call me her. They call me Jane. That's not my name. That's not my name. That's not my name. That's not my name. They call me quiet, but I'm a riot. Mary Jo Lisa, always the same. That's not my name. That's not my name. That's not my name. That's not my name. I'm Mr. Catch if they throw me the ball. I'm the last trip standing up against the They call me help. They call me Stacy. They call me her. They call me Jane. That's not my name. That's not my name. That's not my name. That's not my name. They call me quiet, but I'm a riot. Mary Jo Lisa, always the same. That's not my name. That's not my name. That's not my name. That's not my name.
Ting Tings, That's Not My Name. Originally released as a double A-side with Great DJ by independent record label Switch Flicker Records on, I know, it's good, isn't it? May the 28th in 2007.
Wow.
And recently, it's had a resurgence on TikTok.
Is that right?
Yeah, what happened, celebrities, whatever that is, started posting photos of their dogs on TikTok. And then A-listers like Drew Barrymore and stuff started, and Rihanna, I think, they started doing like collages of all the roles they played, all different shots, and just saying, that's not my name. And it was, so it's just become,
right.
So it had a bit of a, last year, had a bit of a resurgence.
Lovely.
which I thought was kind of cool.
Yeah, help them make some money out of
it. Yeah, that's what I was thinking actually.
Because they only really had a couple of albums, didn't they? And I think it was...
They've released four.
Yeah.
But this one really was the one, I think.
Yeah, this is the one. But I mean, we should. I mean, you love this track. I mean,
yeah.
I love it. You know,
well,
when it came out, very fresh.
Well, I used to live just on Oldham Road, and Islington Mill, which was like, because I lived in Manchester for like 15 years, which is just the north, literally a couple of minutes walk out the literal city centre, was an old mill because it's all the industrial Manchester areas, and that's where they met, and that's where they worked. And they rehearsed there. And I remember a fateful nightclub night, and I actually got up on the podium. You know when you get up on those blocks and you start dancing?
Oh, dear. Oh,
it was the only time I've ever done it in my life. I was so excited. I had a really good time. But, yeah, so that's the Ting Tings. And I was so proud of them, you know, when they really connected in, because they built this scene up. And it's Katie White on vocals, guitar and bass, drums, bass guitar, and cowbells. More cowbell. And Jules DiMartino playing drums, lead guitar and everything. In fact, they've just played everything between the two of them.
He's done a great job producing this record,
yeah.
Actually. It still sounds good, you know.
Fresh.
And back in the day, you know, for it to sound fresh nowadays with all the electronics and stuff that's gone on, I think it's quite difficult, you know. And I think her style, her vocal style as well, really kicked off a lot of female vocals. Yeah, because even now I hear that style of vocal. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I do. And it's like, but they were just really cool. And so Katie worked behind the bar at Islington Mill, and that's how they met, because he was Jules was producing. So that's how they got together. And apparently, they sort of started doing some gigs, got some donations. And after their third gig, they were name checked on XFM, which is the radio station.
Mm-hmm.
And it was one of these Islington Mill gigs, ended up being one of the most sought after tickets on the Manchester party scene. And even like A&R reps were desperate to try and get hold of tickets. Even Rick Rubin.
Wick
Rubin. Another great producer.
Yeah.
And and I remember, I really, really love this song. And I'm so, and it was great. It was really great. And I know I keep going on about it. But I'm just so,
yeah,
you know.
But it was of a time. But just to remind everybody, this is about the Manchester, because we're playing there in October. Well, in Bury, at the Met.
Yes.
The tour dates are attached to this podcast. So,
yeah, indeed.
Look forward to seeing you all there. But this is all about Manchester.
These men sing like subs. Don't is missing like subs. Don't talk to me about your big, big heroes. Most of these men sing like subs.
Kellis Heroes, from the debut album It's Great When You're Straight, released on the 7th of August 1995 through Radioactive Records. The album debuted at number one in the UK albums charts.
Oh yes, what a song.
What a song, what a tune.
I love
and,
that.
And, you know, and it is so strident, and it's, that stands up, it still stands up great. And, you know, well, the unsung hero of, because we all know, we're going to talk about Black Rifle and that more, is actually Wags, the guitar player, because the guitar playing on that is sensational. It really, really is. Right from the, that bang, right from the word go.
Yeah.
Some great slide guitar in there. And, you know, and I know there's a lot of music fans listening to the show. Listen to that slide guitar. It's great. And the solo is very melodic. It's not sort of wanking off doing some shit. It's really cool, really cool. And the groove. And then they got those, like, bongos in the middle.
Yes.
And now, Sean Ryder.
Let's
just have a quick talk about Sean, because Sean Ryder is a crazy man from Manchester. He always has been, you know, he's a legend, massive drug taker, and a very good friend of our photographer, again, Paul Husband.
Yes.
And Paul Husband's taken a lot of shots of him. And we're very honoured to be featured in this exhibition that Paul's doing alongside him and Bez and all the Manchester lot, Paul Heaton,
Elbow,
all that lot. And it's an exhibition called Bands in Pubs. And we're on it as well, because we are taking in a pub. So if you look at any of our PR stuff, you'll see it there. But it's fantastic. And I just love that he did one particular picture of Sean Ryder, and he's under an umbrella, and it is probably one of the best photographs I've ever seen, ever. It's just fantastic.
He's
in Manchester.
On a bench at night,
in Worsley, yeah. Thank you. Yeah. Anyway.
So atmospheric, though.
Yeah.
I mean, I really love that. Now, this is another bloke band, Black Grape. It was formed after the disintegration of Happy Mondays due to Sean's multiple drug addictions and disagreements about revenues, although the band members formed with Bez. That's the tall, skinny guy that dances a lot.
Yeah.
That's how I
That's
know.
That's all he does.
A rapper's Paul Kermit Leverage and Carl Psycho McCarthy. Drummer Jed Lynch, a former member of Ruthless Rap Assassins. Wags and Ollie Dirty Cash Dillon on Ocarina.
What's an Ocarina?
I'll tell you what, though. These guys, I really think that their relationship is quite complex, you know. When I started looking at what actually went down to actually get this band together.
Yeah.
It's been a complete complex so thick with stories, and he met him and she recommended that and this. But in a nutshell, they didn't know what sort of musical direction to take, and Sean wanted to make an album that combined the sounds of hip-hop, Cypress Hill, with the Rolling Stones on the rock edge. And he worked with a few producers. So there was Stephen Lerone. He was a former member of Altered Images.
Ah, right.
Happy birthday.
Yeah.
And then Danny Saber, who'd worked with Cypress Hill, House of Pain, and Bobby Womack. And they had a demo session at Saber at Spirit Studios in Manchester.
And you know about Spirit Studios.
I do. Mm. And I also, and then they were going to go and record the album in Ireland, but then they realised it was a bit pricey. So they ended up just down the road from where I was born at Rockfield Studios.
No, is that where they recorded
this? Yeah, they did 6 tracks down at Rockfield.
Right, so that's where we recorded keyboards.
I know, for our last album.
Yeah.
And it was an absolute, I mean, it's the world's first residential recording studio in Monmouth in Wales, which is literally down the road from me. And it was a huge honour to actually go in and work there. Because you hear about all these things going on. But what happened as well, right, with the Black Grape, because the, I think it was, who was it? It was the Stone Roses were recording at Rockfield at the time. So the guys from Black Grape stayed in the pub until late afternoon in Monmouth, and then they went over and started recording in the evenings when they had their downtime.
Is that right?
Yeah. So the recording, can you imagine though?
Yeah, Stone Roses as well. I bet it was absolute mayhem.
I think that was great.
Well,
so
that's another great Manchester band that we're not featuring. And we're also not featuring Elbow, which, you know, I mean, they're a massive, and they're from Bury, you know, we're playing in Bury in October. But what we wanted to do, we just do something that's not on the radio all the time, just stuff that stuff from Manchester that you just don't hear a lot.
Something fresh.
And exciting.
Questioning faith in everything.
Ryuichi Sakamoto and David Sylvian. Forbidden Colours, from the Nagisa Oshima-directed film Merry Christmas, Mr. Lawrence, also known as Furyo, and was released as a single in 1983 on Virgin Records and also on the film's soundtrack album. It was a minor international hit, reached number 16 in the UK charts, and I've got to say, I bought this on 7-inch vinyl. We have it here, and I love, love, love that song.
Well, this is, I know this track's, this Giorgio says about Manchester, but we couldn't help but put on a track by Ryuichi Sakamoto, who sadly died this last week at age 71.
Yeah.
You know, he'd battling with cancer for some time, and, you know, very sad. A friend, Pedro Abrenosa, who's got a studio up in Porto, he worked with Ryuichi. He came in and did some work at Boom Studios. But, yeah, and, you know, but we know him with reputation. In fact, only a couple of weeks ago, I was listening to his last album. We're going to put something on the show, and I think over the next couple of weeks, once we've finished our series of cities that we're touring in October, we yeah. might put a bit more Ryuichi in, because we love him, you know.
Well, first of all, I did not know that he went to the same primary school as Yoko Ono.
And neither did I. Wow.
No, it was a progressive school.
Okay.
So this guy, Ryuichi, child prodigy, he was composing at age 10. And he said he was born in Japan, but I don't think I'm Japanese. He said 2 years before he moved to New York in 1988, he said, to be a stranger. I like that attitude. I don't like nationalities and I don't like borders.
Mm.
It's an interesting challenge straight off. And he spent his life as a restless traveller. I think both personally and musically, really. I don't think he liked the limelight from what I can gather. I think he just was so into the music. He didn't really want the trappings that went with it. And I think he didn't like it. He didn't want it.
Well, the Yellow Magic Orchestra were very, very influential.
Who? The Yellow Magic Orchestra. What
yeah.
great name.
Between 78 and 84, he was in, of course. I mean, they're massively influential, just as influential, actually, as Kraftwerk.
Yeah.
You know, really, at that time. I know Kraftwerk was sort of a little bit before that, but it's like, you know, what they were doing were very, very exciting. It still stands up to this day, you know?
And I just found out as well that he wrote Behind the Mask at Eric Clapton.
That's right, yeah.
Because I actually bought that as well.
Is that right?
So I'm a sucker for a great melody. Yeah, I love these songs, you know. It's interesting, though, but he was saying that with Ryuichi, he combined his skills as an academically trained musician, but he had this aptitude for electronic music and experimented with synthesizers as well. And he just could play any musical start, really.
Yeah, well, he produced this as well. It's a beautifully produced record, you know, and when you listen to it on headphones, which I always urge you to listen to our show on headphones because of the, you know, because I think it sort of kind of sounds better. But the soundscape, and that's fantastic. And, of course, this was a part of the film, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Merry Christmas, Mr. Lawrence, with David.
David Bowie.
Yeah. And it was funny, though, because he hung out with Bowie during filming every evening for a month, and he never got the courage to ask him to help with scoring the soundtrack for the film.
No.
Because he thought that he was too concentrating on the acting side of it, so he didn't mention it.
Yeah, well.
Well, and I actually think that's a real, real sensitive thing. It's almost like, you know, when you're recording a band in the studio, you don't go on about your music. You're there to serve the band that are in. And I think that with him, he was there going, okay, he was acting in the film as well.
Yeah.
And you concentrate on the acting and you separate it out. I just thought it was fantastic. And his film score won a BAFTA for best film music as well for Merry Christmas, Mr. Lawrence.
Well, it's a beautiful score, you know. And David Sylvian, I mean, he really does a great job of singing it. Because, of course, the funny thing is he was in the band Japan, which sort of is a very funny sort of turn.
It's odd, isn't it?
It is, yeah. And, of course, David Sylvian is still alive and he's an English musician. You know, and he's done a lot of work since. But I think this whole time with Japan and this particular track was really his crowning glory, wasn't it?
But I think soundtracks were his thing, really, because it says that he won an Academy Award along with David Byrne and Kong Su for a soundtrack to The Last Emperor, remember?
Right, yeah.
And he worked on loads of collaborations with Iggy Pop, Brian Wilson, Bootsy Collins. I mean, there's just so much. I would urge you, in fact, I'm going to go and play some Yellow Magic Orchestra and just play some more of his music. But I just fell in love. In fact, my younger sister scratched my 7-inch vinyl version.
Oh, no.
Oh, yes. It just at the end. Look.
Oh, no.
But anyway, I've still got it. But I just think, well, what a gift of music that this man has given to us.
It's absolutely marvellous.
Yeah.
And this is, we're nearly ended at the show, really. We've got, I'd urge you to read our blog, Vibes, which is vibes.starlight-campbell.com.
Yeah.
And also, hopefully, we'll see you on tour in the UK.
September, October.
September, October, yeah. As I said, we'll put an attachment on this.
And we've got a new album we're releasing called Starlight One.
Yeah, we're very, very excited. And it's art rock, and we're working on it right now. And it's so different. And, it's frightening me, actually.
I know, but it's so exciting. And you know what? And I asked you, could we play this song? Because this song, right, for me, is Manchester. This
is.
Song, I absolutely love it.
We had it on recently.
You're wearing the T-shirt from the album right this moment. I'm looking at you. You're wearing it.
It's The Fall.
Yeah. Cut down bridge. Somebody said to me,
I can't understand the word you said.
I said, 99% of non-smokers die. Yeah, yeah. What? Yeah. I was walking down the street and saw a picture of a black man. The flat is evil.
Yeah, man.